This is an audio archive edition of WINA's Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot, made available online by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network, cvillepodcast.com.
Bob Gibson of the Charlottesville Daily Progress joins us in studio each Monday for a discussion of current affairs, and today is no different. Good afternoon, sir.
Good afternoon. Always good to join you, and better today than last week.
Absolutely. Well, last week when you were in studio,
it had just happened,
and we were just talking, really didn't know much at that point.
Well, we knew about Professor Livy Librescu, and we knew that he'd saved members of his class, given his life. We didn't know exactly how, but he's one of the real heroes to come out of this.
Absolutely. A lot of heroic stories that took place last week. And, of course, as I have mentioned before, I think the heroism and the courage continues among those that are very close to the families and the members of the families who were directly touched by this tragedy.
I think we were, you know, a lot of us were touched in so many ways, maybe not directly, but I think Charlottesville and Blacksburg are closer together than they've ever been.
It really is interesting to see that happening because we sort of, historically, there's always been this sports rivalry that people have enjoyed, you know, that's sort of fun. And just a few weeks ago, we had the UVA fraternity members who went down to Blacksburg and stole some mascot or something or other.
Pet trick.
Right. So I can only imagine what it's going to be at the Tech game this fall.
Well, I was talking with a state senator today, Ed Houck, who announced his plans to run for a seventh term this year. And Ed is a Wahoo and comes from Southwest Virginia and believes that most of his family died in the World Hokies. He said, I will never again view Virginia Tech the same way. They aren't rivals. I can't feel a rivalry. I only feel good things toward Virginia Tech. And I think a lot of Wahoos, myself included, we want it to be a rivalry, but I don't think it will be a nasty rivalry. I think it will be a much closer rivalry between two schools that respect and like each other.
Well, hopefully that's one of the good things that will come of this tragedy as we search for good things to come of it. Another one being a review of policies that are in any way involved in this tragedy. And you have written of that recently. I believe last Friday, your column dealt with this very idea of our elected leaders now turning their eye to sort of review what happened and what can we possibly do to prevent something like this in the future. You're not going to prevent violence. You're
right.
Not going to stop violence.
Right, but you can have common sense policies that make sense, that merge the list of people who are mental health committal candidates and who've been committed to a mental health institution or to outpatient treatment, as in the case of the shooter in this case. You can merge that with a list, and have to merge that with a list of, you know, the instant records checks for firearms purchases, for example. So I think mental health is at the top of everyone's list in terms of where you're going to have to reexamine how the laws apply to protect society. Not that, you know, individuals who are mentally ill are any more of a threat, but that there are threats there and they have to be flagged.
Bob Gibson of the Charlottesville Daily Progress is our guest this half hour on Charlottesville Right Now, and we invite you, as always, to join the conversation at 977-1070. If you've got a comment or a question or just a statement regarding policy implications as a result of last week's tragedy. Bob, how likely is it, perhaps on a scale of 1 to 10, that you think we're going to see legislation acted on in this coming General Assembly session, dealing first with mental illness and then second with any type of gun control or anything to do with firearms?
On mental illness, I think it's unavoidable. I think we have to tighten up the law so that there are not cracks through which people slip and are not given the treatment they need, and society is not protected from them in the rare case that it can be, such as on a records check for a gun purchase.
And how about legislation that might deal with gun control?
That's a tougher thing to predict,
especially here in the Commonwealth.
You know, I was listening last week as Sean Hannity and Neil Bortz each said, if only a teacher had had a gun, if only a teacher had had a gun. You know, that kind of rank speculation is the thing that we've heard in the last week. We aren't going to have a rational debate until some of the emotionalism surrounding this dies down, and we look with a little more rationality at what actually might work. This would not have been prevented by any gun control law enactable that I can think of.
Yeah, so, because he followed the law all the way down the line, did
right.
he not?
Now, but there should have been that instant records check flag on him because of his mental health status.
And what happened? Where is there a loophole somewhere, or is there is
yeah,
this just
the federal law and state law are not in concert, and I think they're going to have to iron that out. There's some state legislators say they're troubled by a lot of things having to do with meeting the federal law. The federal law also requires in many cases of hospitalizations privacy that might conflict with the ability to flag these cases in a way to get treatment for people who need it and to protect the public.
I'm confused. Does the federal law say that someone who's been treated for mental illness cannot buy a weapon, but then in Virginia we let them?
There is a restriction regarding the instant records check and the federal law that should have covered in this case, and it's not entirely clear why it didn't. That someone who has been adjudged committable as a danger to himself or others, as this gentleman was, can be prevented from an instant records check purchase. So that part of the law, it's not clear. Virginia submitted, you know, thousands and thousands of names to the federal government. His name was not on the list that was submitted. It's not clear why.
But it should have been, according to the specs that they have required, right?
We think it should have been. We are not, you know, this all has to be investigated. I mean, you aren't going to solve these things. You aren't going to find all the facts in the first week. It's just not going to happen. And one thing I was writing about in Sunday's column, and you know, this was a very, very emotional week. And we had excesses on the side of the media as well as, you know, other individuals, bloggers I won't name.
Bob Gibson joins us in studio each Monday, and this is no different. Joe has been waiting patiently on the line. Joe, thanks for the call. You're on with Bob Gibson. Go right ahead.
Thank you. Bob, I was wondering, why do you think Governor Kaine did not appoint any member of the General Assembly to his special commission, since any action would have to be passed through the General Assembly?
Well, I think he was looking for specialists from different fields. He wanted a judge. He wanted a victim's advocate. He wanted various specialists. It is a little bit unusual that he wouldn't name a couple of members of the assembly, but he wanted a small panel that could work together. And I guess that's why he left off the legislators, who frankly aren't as much experts in this field as those they listen to when they write the laws.
Joe? Would you, by the question, are we to take it that you would have recommended that some legislators be included on that panel?
Oh, certainly.
Maybe he didn't want to politicize it. You know, there's been all of the lawmakers I've talked to in the last week have been very, very, very reluctant to talk about policy yet. They will, but they've been reluctant to so far because of the tremendous raw emotion of this tragedy that has hit so many people. They don't want to be seen as taking advantage of it for one position or another. And that doesn't stop radio talk show hosts, this one excluded, of course. But
well, thank you.
it doesn't stop other radio talk show hosts from saying rather provocative things. But, you know, I think they want a policy debate without a political debate.
Joe, thank you so much for the call. Appreciate it. Bob, let's get to the issue of how this tragedy has been covered. First, your general thoughts, and then you dealt with this in your column yesterday in the Daily Progress.
General thoughts are that I've never seen a larger feeding frenzy, and yet it's amazing how good the students and how good the faculty at Virginia Tech looked under the glare, the harsh, harsh glare, with all the emotions they were dealing with. They did a very creditable job for their institution. They made Virginia Tech look really good.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I also agree that it was a feeding frenzy unlike one we've seen for a long time, especially in this area. The only one I could think of that there was certainly when Christopher Reeve had that accident with the horse.
That was nothing compared
to this. And even the baby switch at UVA
nothing compared to this.
Was, you know, the Omni Ballroom was full of reporters, but that, again, was nothing compared to this.
I mean, when you've got all the networks doing 24-hour coverage and every satellite truck within, you know, several hundred miles of Blacksburg descending on the place, you know, for more than for any... It was bigger than Super Bowl coverage, which doesn't last as long. It was so intense that it was very hard, and there were excesses. One reporter dressed up as a doctor to try to gain entrance to a hospital. You know, that's clearly crossing ethical lines, journalistic lines that can't be crossed. Another reporter posed as a family member to get into a family member's waiting room and talk to other family members of victims.
Oh, my God.
I mean, that's disgusting.
Yeah.
A major American network had a doctor call up and say he had corporate clearance for an interview when he did not. You know, this is the kind of stuff that gives everybody in the media a bad name. And it's the kind of excess you get when you're in a huge feeding frenzy like this one was.
Yeah. And if I could take off my radio hat and put on my communications hat for 1 minute, I thought the folks down in tech, with the assistance of I know some folks from UVA went down there, and I'm sure they had assistance from other colleges in Virginia, that they did a terrific job handling that frenzy.
They did. I think they did a very good job handling it, and I think the most of the news institutions, especially the ones from Virginia, you know, from Richmond, from Charlottesville, from Roanoke, I think they did a very good job.
Yeah, we had that period in the very beginning when there were. I guess let's just say tough questions asked, questions that might have been better asked by this review panel, but the reporters were asking them almost meanly, you know, well, why didn't you do this in hour?
The Knoxville paper had an obnoxious headline the next day for which they apologized, basically questioning whether the deaths weren't the responsibility, you know, just about saying on their front page there's blood on the hands of Virginia Tech officials. There wasn't anything you could jump to that conclusion with in the way of facts. There was supposition. It was extreme, and it was it turned out to be something that has to be looked at, but it certainly didn't justify that kind of coverage in the first day. And asking those tough questions, you know, they're tough questions, and then they're ridiculous questions. Some questions are ridiculously premature.
Bob Gibson writes for the Charlottesville Daily Progress. You're listening to Charlottesville right now on News Radio 1070 WINA. Bob, what's the schedule for the governor's review panel? Have they said when he expects a report? And
they're going to meet within a few weeks and probably set a schedule. I'm not sure. They want to have legislative action, and they have time. Legislative action ready for the General Assembly when it reconvenes, and that won't be until January of next year. So
right.
So they have plenty of time to give this a thorough look at the facts as they're developed and look at the policies and see where federal and state policies have to be better brought into conformity and improved.
So we're going to see quite a bit of tech-related, tragedy-related legislation very likely in January.
Well, I think the mental health morass has to be cleaned up. You know, this guy, the ball was dropped on him. He was sent for outpatient treatment, and he apparently never went. And there's no record that he went. And then they dropped the ball. So, you know, he didn't get what he needed, and certainly he wasn't flagged as he should have been on the instant records check for gun purchases.
Right. Some of the interviews I've heard have said that, you know, we send some of these people who clearly need to be watched over and clearly need some more help. They, because of budget cutbacks or whatever, for whatever reason, we often find ourselves in a position where we as a society just sort of send them home and say, well, go home, take care of yourself, and take your meds.
A lot of people fall through the cracks. Mental health, Virginia is not one of those states that spends a lot of money on mental health. We're 40-something. And I think that may change as a result of this, because this is going to shine a very harsh and bright spotlight on some real problems.
Bob Gibson with the Charlottesville Daily Progress. We got about a minute left before we cut to local news here at the bottom of the hour. But there was an annual political event that took place last week that obviously and understandably was quite overshadowed by the events in Blacksburg. And that's the annual shad planking, which it did go on.
It was very toned down, and it was very respectful. as it should have been, of the students and faculty and administration, the tragedy in Virginia Tech, the entire Hokie family. And people wore all kinds of maroon and orange, just as I've never seen as much maroon and orange around Charlottesville as I have in the last week. And that includes a lot of Hokie games where a lot of Hokie fans come here. You know, Charlottesville has reached out to address the needs and feel for the students and others at Tech. And I think that was in evidence also down at the Shad Planking in Wakefield, which was a very somber event.
Now, the governor did not go. He did not attend, obviously, and the attorney general did not attend.
Right. They pulled their people out. But Bill Bowling, the lieutenant governor, was the speaker. He gave a speech on how we have to come together in the wake of this tragedy.
I thought it was. I read the transcript of his comments at the Shad Planking, and I thought it was really quite moving. Some of the best comments I've heard over the last week about this tragedy.
Well, he's a Hokie. He has a Hokie son, and you know he's part of the family, and he felt it, and a lot of people there felt it, and a lot of people who I know as dyed-in-the-wool Wahoos were down there. Wearing their Virginia Tech colors for the first time ever.
Bob Gibson of the Charlottesville Daily Progress. He joins us each Monday to talk current affairs. Thank you so much, Bob.
Thank you.
Take care.
You've been listening to Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot. Charlottesville Right Now is broadcast live Monday through Friday on News Radio 1070 WINA from 4 to 6 p.m. Best-selling author and historian Coy Barefoot is the host and producer. To interact with Coy and his guests, you can call 434-977-1070. Coy can be reached at barefoot@wina.com. This audio download has been made possible by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network. Visit cvillepodcast.com for more.